Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's go,
man. I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Thursday to you, boys and girls. We've got one question and one question only for you. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Well, that's all that really matters. We come to you live for the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Coming up, Greg Anthony is going to join us 18 minutes from now. We'll talk to Greg about tonight's game one of the NBA Finals. It's very interesting because last year was the crowning achievement for LeBron's career. I don't think he'll ever accomplish anything like he did last season. I don't think there's going to be anything that is more impressive, that is more impeccable, that is a greater legacy moment than coming back from down 3-1 against a 73-win squad to bring the first championship ever to the city of Cleveland since 1964 and the first one in franchise history. I don't think you can top that. I mean, even if LeBron wins this year to go back-to-back against a squad that is arguably better with Kevin Durant, even if LeBron wins a total of 6 to then tie or 7 to surpass Michael Jordan, I just don't think you can top in terms of achievements what last year's championship was and how he did it and who he did it against. But that being said, if he beats this Warriors team again, if he has yet another incredible postseason series against the Warriors, he's had 2 in a row that are 2 of the greatest of all time, it might be more impressive just in terms of how talented the Warriors are in terms of the opponent that he beat. The Warriors didn't have as many wins as last year, but being that good and adding Kevin Durant and not losing in the postseason, it would be pretty epic. I mean, last year's Warriors team was down 3-1 in the Western Finals. This year's Warriors team didn't lose at all en route to the Finals. So the challenge, the degree of difficulty is obviously very, very high for LeBron. But I really think that no matter what happens in this series, even if he wins, it doesn't top what he did last year. We'll talk to Greg Anthony about Kevin Durant as well. And Kevin Durant's in a weird situation because if they win the title, which most people expect them to do, will it feel like validation and vindication for Kevin Durant? Or will it feel like he simply joined a great team that had already won without him and rode them to a championship? It's bizarre because when LeBron joined forces in Miami, yes, the Heat had won a championship 5 years earlier with Dwayne Wade, but it was a totally different team. And he joined up with Wade and Chris Bosh to create a new team. He didn't join a squad that had already won a championship. He created a completely new team. And with this one, with Kevin Durant going there, they won a championship, went to back-to-back finals, and won 73 games without him. So him joining them, if they win a championship this year, I'm interested to see how people process that. I think Kevin Durant's a wonderful player. I think Kevin Durant largely is a good guy. Kevin Durant was the most breathtaking college basketball player for 1 year I ever saw when he was at Texas. But I don't know how gratifying it will seem, I guess, for the rest of us looking at Kevin Durant if he's basically good for one more win. Last year's Warriors team went to Game 7 of the NBA Finals. So you're adding the second best player in basketball, arguably, for one more win? Craig tweets in, DA, even if the Golden State Warriors win the championship, KD won't really get any credit since they've already won a ring without him and don't need him. Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't know how we'll all look at Kevin Durant. I mean, he would have a ring, but would it seem like he really broke through as a great player? I suppose if he's the NBA Finals MVP. Rich tweets in, DA, it won't top last year's for LeBron, but this title is more like don't ever put KD and Steph in the same sentence as me kind of thing for him. 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. So finally, the NFL has relented and allowed Mike Tirico to be calling Thursday Night Football in its entirety this upcoming season. Al Michaels will handle Sunday Night Football for NBC. Mike Tirico will handle Thursday Night Football for NBC as part of the Thursday Night package. And I got to be honest, I have found this resistance to letting Tirico call the Thursday Night games nonsensical from an NFL standpoint. Number one, we all know how good Tirico is. There's nobody on the planet that thinks he can't call a good football game. And Mike Tirico is, without a shadow of a doubt, the most versatile broadcaster we have in sports today. The guy can call the NBA on radio, the NBA Finals on radio. He can call the NFL in primetime on television. He can call golf. He can call tennis. He can host soccer, or he can host horse racing. The guy is simply the most diverse ability and talent we have in sports broadcasting. He can do high-level play-by-play on radio, high-level play-by-play on television, multiple sports, and host multiple sports. And if you need him to do highlights, has a breadth, a ton of experience doing that with his SportsCenter days. There is nobody as talented as that. Imagine a guy that you trust with basketball, you trust with football, you trust with soccer, you trust with golf, you trust with tennis. There's just simply no one like that. And horse racing. There's simply nobody like that. You know, Bob Costas checks a lot of boxes, but he's ultimately a host at heart. Yes, he does play-by-play on MLB Network, but really he's a host at heart. Tirico is not only a host, he's another level great play-by-play guy. And he'll host the Olympics. You know, so the guy just does it all. So it was always so weird that the NFL resisted allowing Tirico to do those Thursday night games last year because they were so caught up in being paranoid that the Thursday night package was a JV package of games and that we, the public, looked at it as a JV package. We knew that it was garbage matchups mostly. We knew that it was garbage football mostly. And we knew that it looked stupid because they had dumb color rush uniforms. So it looked JV. And so the NFL was like, well, if everybody's going to make fun and mock the Thursday night package, we've got to make sure that we've got Sims and Nance on it or Tirico and Collinsworth. Or I'm sorry, Michaels and Collinsworth. And that's where they got bent out of shape about the NBC contract wanting Tirico to do it because Michaels didn't want to do two games a year, or two games a week, rather, and they just hired Tirico, so why not give a great play-by-play guy that platform? We knew he would do a great job. We knew it didn't sound small time. He had called Monday Night Football for a decade, and he's supremely talented. So it never made any sense. Well, finally, the NFL pulls an about-face and yesterday announced that with NBC, Tirico's going to call all of the Thursday night games for that network. And here's why it really didn't make any sense. CBS, my network, is going to be employing Tony Romo to call the biggest games on CBS every week, including the AFC Championship game and, when we get the Super Bowl again at CBS, the Super Bowl. So the NFL is completely fine with a guy that has no broadcast experience whatsoever calling the single biggest games of the week on one of their national networks and soon a Super Bowl, but weren't okay with Mike Tirico on Thursday nights? It didn't make any sense to me. Do I think Tony Romo's going to be great at broadcasting? Not necessarily. I think he'll probably be serviceable. I've never seen anything from Tony Romo that leads me to believe the guy's going to be a really incisive analyst and really break it down and be willing to be critical, because he's got a lot of relationships and a lot of friendships in football still. So I've got my doubts on just how great he can be, but I think he'll be serviceable. I think he's well-liked enough. He's well-spoken enough that Tony Romo will figure it out as we go along. But the NFL is going to be totally fine with Tony Romo having never called a game, never been in that booth, as though it doesn't take any talent whatsoever, and just stick him into the number one game of the week for the AFC and be fine. But Mike Tirico, with 10 years calling Monday Night Football, wasn't good enough for Thursday night? It doesn't make any sense. It never made any sense. It still doesn't make any sense. And I'm glad that they righted it wrong, because the guy's amazing and deserves to be able to call that package. But the NFL's broadcasting things, the things that they make priorities, just don't make any sense. Like, was Tony Siragusa on the sideline not saying anything insightful, eating chicken legs? Was that good for the NFL? Was that the proper way to deliver the NFL to the masses? I would argue no. I would argue I never got anything insightful from Tony Siragusa, that it was just a clown show. But they were worried about Tirico on Thursday nights? Again, there's just some things I can't figure out about that league. Will is next up in Florida, listening on the radio.com app to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Will?
What's going on, DA? Can I get beamed up?
You know it. What you got, buddy?
Awesome, man. Hey, I'm just sitting here on the beach. I heard you talking about Tiger Woods, and I just wanted to add something about that. I still think he's got some good years of golf left in him.
Well, when you say that, you mean like winning some lesser tournaments or winning majors?
Oh, definitely a major. I mean, he's on the pro tour. I mean, he's honestly going to be pretty good.
Well, the guy's 41. He's going to be out for two straight years, and he can't stay healthy enough to actually compete in tournaments. So what makes you think he's going to be healthy enough to compete in a major?
Well, I mean, it's not just good that because he's healthy or anything. I don't really know anything about his health or anything. But, I mean, it's just, I heard there's a lot of people talking bad stuff about him. And I know this drunk, the thing he gets pulled over for, I just know that he is all over it. He is just not feeling good. And now there's any of his fans. And I'm just really hoping everything's going to be all right. And I think he's still going to be doing good in golf.
Well, look, you can hope, but I would not wait with bated breath for him to win a major again. I don't think that's ever going to happen. Tiger Woods' body is ravaged. Tiger Woods' body is never going to give him a full season of golf ever again. He will only be able to play in patches, in spurts. And I don't know if his body is ever going to feel good enough and stay healthy enough to compete for four straight days of the highest level and remain healthy for those four straight days and be able to close on Sunday the way that it needs against guys now 15 years younger than him. I don't think it's going to happen. Will he compete in golf again? I'm sure he's going to try. Do I think his body will ever allow him to play a full season again? No. Do I think he's ever going to win another major? No, I don't. I think that door has now closed. When we come back, the NBA Finals, we'll talk about that. LeBron, Kevin Durant, and everything going on tonight in Game 1 with Greg Anthony. Next, DA, CBS Sports Radio. Guns N' Roses are back here, the most dangerous band on earth, playing all of their electrifying hits. Get tickets to the Not In This Lifetime tour now at LiveNation.com. Welcome back, DA, with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Game 1 of the NBA Finals, which comes up tonight at NBA TV, is going to have coverage beginning at 6:30 Eastern Time with the starters. Now, NBA TV is the ultimate destination for fans seeking the most in-depth highlights of the finals, news, and analysis throughout this series, including a 90-minute Live of the Finals pregame shows every night, a nightly postgame coverage, and a full slate of original programming as well, including NBA Finals Film Room, which starts tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on NBA TV. Joining us from Turner Sports and NBA TV, our friend Greg Anthony. Greg, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, D.A. How are you, my man?
I'm doing tremendous. Thanks, as always, for joining us. When you saw Kevin Durant decide to join the Golden State Warriors last year, were you excited for him? Were you disappointed? Were you stunned? What was your feeling in terms of him joining a ready-made title contender?
I understood it in today's world where you're judged solely on whether or not you win championships. That kind of determines your legacy, if you will. And so while he's caught a lot of backlash for it, obviously, in his mind, he made the right choice. And based on what's happened thus far, you can't really argue with it. Now, that's not going to appease a lot of people. But, you know, as an athlete, you got to do what you think is going to be best for your career. And in his mind, after weighing all the information, Kevin's a smart guy, you know, he felt that this would give him the best opportunity, you know, to kind of elevate his status as a player. And, you know, when you look at the makeup of their team, they're a juggernaut. They're going to have a chance, if healthy, over the next several years to compete and win championships. And so that's ultimately what the goal of a player is to win. Now, the irony of that is that's been made the case by a lot of how our society has evolved, because it wasn't always that way. You know, it didn't used to be you were judged based solely on whether or not you won championships. But for whatever reason, that has kind of become the talking point and the barometer that we use. And so because of that, now I think you're going to see even more guys start to chase, if you will, the term chase a ring, start to happen. LeBron did it. You know, people forget Shaquille O'Neal did it. You know, obviously Durant has done it. So it's not as if this is uncharted territory. I think what made it strange in his case was the fact that they had this team down 3-1 and on the verge of being able to supplant them in the Western Conference. And before they kind of imploded, and the Warriors played brilliantly and were able to surpass them and get back to the finals.
The Warriors are the favorites in this series. Would you have considered the Warriors the favorites if Kevin Durant was not on that team?
No, I would not have. And I don't, you know, I actually still think I picked Cleveland to win before the season started, and I still think that they're going to win the series. I don't know how, but I think they're going to win it. That's a consensus, and I get it. You know, when you look at the firepower that they have, how good they are defensively, how sustained their consistency has been over the last three seasons, there's no reason for them not to be the favorite. That I get. I don't see the overwhelming favorite. You know, I mean, the Cavs are really good. Like, we get caught up in their regular season a little bit, but, you know, they're built a little differently. They're an older team. You know, they rely on it. They had a lot of moving parts over the course of the season. If you think about the trades and the signings and then the injuries and all those things that played a big role, their team's just built differently. But for whatever reason, they seem to have played much better in this postseason, and they're playing with tremendous confidence. And you know, as good as Golden State is, I mean, a team that has LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love playing like the Kevin Love of old, it's hard for me to just say that they're going to be an overwhelming underdog, especially having the confidence of winning it in the style and the manner in which they did a season ago.
You know, we're talking to Greg Anthony, joining us from Turner Sports, in advance of tonight's Game 1 of the NBA Finals. When Durant left after, as you mentioned, being up 3-1 on the Warriors when he was with the Thunder, I thought about your teams, because your teams with the Knicks continually ran into a great team in Michael's Bulls in the 90s. And you were there for the 91 run, the 92 run, 93, 94, 95, et cetera. When you guys were clashing heads with the Bulls and Michael at his peak, was there ever any sentiment, whether from you or teammates, like, damn, we got bad luck because we got to keep running into one of the greats of all time and we're just on the wrong end of history right now? Or is this kind of idea that every year, hey, man, we can get better next year and do it. We can get better the next year and do it. Because now, as you say, you kind of zoom out, and some of these guys think, well, I better just go get a ring by going somewhere else instead of slamming my head into the wall.
Yeah, no, we felt like we were a better team. Like you, we had supreme confidence, and it's probably one reason why we had more success against them than anybody they faced in the finals. Remember, they never faced a seventh game in the finals. And I think Michael was favored in five of the six finals. But a lot of that has to do with confidence. Like, we truly believed it. Now, we had a legendary coach in Pat Riley that helped to instill that kind of confidence in us. And so that played a tremendous role in that. But also, it was a different era. You know, it just was. It's the irony of it is, the consensus for a lot of people, I shouldn't say the consensus, but the vast majority of people say Michael Jordan's the greatest player ever lived. And then they say, well, he is because he, you know, won six championships. Well, you know, based on that premise, then why wouldn't Bill Russell be the greatest player ever lived? You know, he won more championships. Or why wouldn't Kareem, who won as many and played in more finals? You know, so the eras are just different, just like this era is different. You do have superstars moving. You have guys that are far more aware of their worth, and they understand that I can go to a better situation than what I have. I mean, it's not as if in LeBron's case when he did it, or Durant, that they didn't give their all to that organization. And I said this when LeBron left Cleveland. LeBron left Cleveland because he didn't believe that they could build a championship-caliber team. That's why he left. Pat Riley sold him, and Pat Riley delivered. And I think that's part of what happened for Durant. I just think that he lost some confidence and faith in that organization as to whether or not they could build a championship-caliber team. Think about it from his perspective. They went from having Harden, Ibaka, and he and Westbrook, all young and evolving. All of a sudden, you lose Harden, then you lose Ibaka. And you hadn't really replaced those guys. So I absolutely see how he would say, man, you know, we're making it harder to win a championship, not easier. And I think that played a role in his decision to go to Golden State. And it was a perfect storm because there probably wouldn't be another year where he would have been able to go to Golden State because of the situation with the salary cap.
Greg Anthony is our guest here on the show. Final question. Last year's accomplishment by LeBron was so incredible because he comes down from down 3-1. He delivered the first championship to Cleveland and all of these things. But this year's Warriors team adds Kevin Durant. If the Cavaliers win this year, which of the two finals would you consider more impressive for the Cavs?
Ooh, that's a great call. I have to see how this one plays out. You know, I think, listen, first of all, to do something historic, that's pretty significant to be now 3-1 to a team that just broke the record for wins in the regular season. That was going to be hard to top. If this is a series where from the beginning they can somehow have control and it's close, but they go on to win it, I would still probably say last year. Just because of how they did it. Again, the thing about athletes, man, confidence is big. It's hard to convince a group that they can come back from 3-1 against a team like that. You know, like the belief they had to have, how hard it had to be for him, more so than the coach, how hard it had to be for LeBron to convince his guys that they could actually come back and win it. Because remember, it's one thing to be down 3-1. That means they also had to go win two more at Golden State. They had to win games 5 and 7. And so that, to me, I don't know if you can top it, but this will just add to the lore of it if they can somehow win this one after the Warriors went out and kind of refurbished that roster a little bit by adding one of the all-time greats in Kevin Durant.
Greg Anthony's going to be breaking down each NBA Finals game the day after it airs alongside Mike Fratello, on NBA Finals Film Room beginning with tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern time on NBA TV. Game 1 will be broken down there. NBA TV, the ultimate destination for in-depth highlights, news, analysis following the NBA Finals games, before the NBA Finals games, at the Finals pregame shows. 90 minutes starting tonight. NBA TV's NBA Finals Game 1 coverage begins tonight at 6:30 Eastern time with the starters. Greg, great to catch up, my man. Thanks as always. Always a pleasure.
Anytime, DA.
Greg Anthony joining us here on the show. When we return, we've got your cut line, the stories that did not make the cut, plus...
I am the epic fail.
Your epic fail, and we prepare for tomorrow's arrival by Mr. Six in studio. Yes, Mraz's ultimate villain from fantasy football, from flag football, rather, is coming in studio. Less of a fantasy, more of a nightmare. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. Eastern time, you'll have to be able to catch that live, and you'll be able to also watch it and see the fear in Mraz's eyes. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Open now for brunch.
I'll take that. Can that be my sound effect for the show?
Yeah, sure.
Sick.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Katie Linadal.
Sick.
That's like her total perfect catchphrase.
Sick.
Sign up to be an O Rewards member today. Start earning instantly. O Rewards members earn $5 back for every 150 points you earn. It's fast, easy, and free. Only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store for details. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. Mark tweets, DA, Kevin Durant choking and playing terrible on OKC, up 3-1 over the Warriors last year, is a big reason why they weren't in the finals last season. It's true, Durant could not close along with Westbrook in that series. It's interesting. I don't know how America is going to view Kevin Durant if the Warriors win a championship here. I know how I will view him, and this is even if he has an NBA Finals MVP-type performance. And that is that Durant had to jump on somebody else's sled that was already really good. See, I don't hold it against LeBron the same way, and here's why. Because the context was completely different. LeBron was the fulcrum through which everything ran with the Heat. So he leaves a team in Cleveland that is a championship contender but can't quite break through and joins Miami. Miami was a lottery team before he got there, then went to four straight NBA Finals with him. The Cleveland Cavaliers were a perennial contender with him. He left. They were a lottery team. Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City. They were the sixth seed in the West this year. He joins the Warriors, and the Warriors went to two NBA Finals without him, and they're back exactly where they were with him. Now, they're probably a better version of themselves. They haven't lost a playoff game. But in terms of attaining the ultimate goal, they probably would be here even without Kevin Durant. And so it's very difficult for me to give him a ton of props because, you know what? I understand why people didn't like LeBron and Wade and Bosch. I didn't like it either when they were dancing around and saying not one, not two, not three, the laser light show. That was the epitome of arrogance. It was throwing it in people's face. It was having accomplished nothing and projecting all of this ego already before they had done anything. I didn't like it either. But it was different context. I mean, if LeBron left that Heat team, well, when he did, they went back to being a lottery squad. He is the focal point. He is the fulcrum. And anything his teams have accomplished could not do anything close without him. Kevin Durant joins the Warriors, a team that was this close to winning back-to-back finals without him. They don't need him. They didn't need him, and they wouldn't need him if he left. So it's weird. It's like they could win the NBA championship, but they could have won it without him. If you took LeBron off of Cleveland, the Cavaliers are lucky to make the playoffs, even with Kyrie and Kevin Love. I mean, they probably make the playoffs, but what? They might be just like Russell Westbrook and OKC, a sixth seed. But they're nowhere close to the finals. Meantime, the Warriors without Kevin Durant, had Kevin Durant ripped his Achilles on day one of the season and been out the entire year, the Warriors are probably still in the NBA Finals. John tweets, in DA have Mr. Six and Mraz go nose to nose like they do after a weigh-in. It would be a good photo op and could lead to punches thrown. I like our bloodthirsty listeners wanting punches thrown. That might be a good idea, though. A little boxing weigh-in, MMA weigh-in type of photo shoot, photo op?
Yeah, that might be a cool idea, except I don't know if he's going to get that it's a photo op. Like, what if he pops me in the nose again in that spot? Like, if he thinks I just happen to blink the wrong way at him. This is not a sane individual we're talking about.
Michael tweets, DA, is Mr. Six coming in studio? If so, are you going to have bodyguards for Mraz? He is coming in studio. He's going to be on the show tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern time, so the top of the third hour. He'll be in studio. You'll want to watch it. You'll want to get locked in. You'll want to listen to it because I don't know what to expect. We will not have bodyguards, though. So, as you might imagine, I'm guessing Mr. Six waltzes in here looking to intimidate Mraz because Mr. Six knows he's been suspended because Mraz has opened up his big yammer. He's already popped him in the nose once. Mraz isn't a fighter. Mr. Six knows that. And Mr. Six believes that Mraz has unfairly smeared his reputation on national airwaves. So I think Mr. Six is going to be upset tomorrow. We can't allow punches to be thrown in studio. That's not going to be acceptable. I will tell Mr. Six that when he arrives. But as for him,
good luck.
As for him staring daggers through you for the entirety of the interview, I'm sure that's going to happen. And you are going to cower like a little baby in the corner. I can guarantee it.
No, I'm standing my ground. I'm a tough guy now.
Suddenly you're a tough guy.
I'm a tough guy. I take a shot like that in the face, you become tough.
Bald Man Dan tweets, DA, Mr. Six's imminent arrival has Mraz channeling his inner Bobby the Brain Heenan. Hashtag he's a weasel. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Mraz is starting to weasel around on this one. I'm going to talk about him as soon as he leaves, talk about him behind his back, all this type of stuff. Yeah. You could see that Bobby Bilotti, right? He's definitely a Bobby the Brain Heenan right now.
Oh, he's resorting down that route, but I wouldn't besmirch the great name of Bobby Heenan.
Very nice. All right, let's get to your cut line this morning.
These stories were left out by the selection committee. Cut from their high school team. The news that didn't make the show. It's the cut line.
Gross story about LeBron James and vandalism. There was a racial slur that was vandalized on his Los Angeles home. LeBron spoke about it and said, you know, no matter how much money you have, no matter how famous you are, no matter how many people admire you, being black in America, it's tough. And it's just a gross story. We know that there's ugliness out there. We are aware of the ugliness that involves racial stuff that happens in this country, and it's really unfortunate. It bothers me a lot. And I hope that one day we progress past this. Not everybody will, but hopefully most of us will. Hopefully we will not have to deal with stupid stuff like this. But man, I just can't imagine what type of lowlife you are to be vandalizing anybody's home with racial slurs. And this has to do with anybody that has drawn swastikas on those that are Jewish or the N-word on those that are African-American or other things on those that are Latin-American, Mexican-American, you know, gay or lesbian. I don't know what type of person that is, but it is the worst type of our people. And we have to continually remind ourselves to not allow that to fester, not allow that to take place, not allow that for anybody to think that that's okay, because it's obviously not. And it's just totally reprehensible.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Mr. Met flips a fan the middle finger last night at Citi Field. One could understand that, because the Mets got whomped up on 7-1 by the Milwaukee Brewers. And this is basically the perfect encapsulation of the Mets season right now. Everybody's frustrated. Everybody's dejected. Everybody's angry. And even Mr. Met has seen enough. He's caught on camera flipping the bird at a fan. Now, I don't know if this is some type of aggressive Brewers fan I don't know if this was some type of aggressive somebody else fan. Maybe it's a Yankee fan in attendance. Maybe Mr. Met is getting it from the crowd, getting it from these guys. But Mr. Met, I can tell you, is beloved. As a Mets fan myself, I love Mr. Met. And when he walks around the stadium, like most mascots, he's the most popular guy there. If you are saying bad things, raunchy things, angry things at Mr. Met, you've got a problem, mister. You know what? You've got the problem. And that's also something in America I will not tolerate. Being disrespectful to mascots. Those guys and gals under there are working hard. They're working hard. I have worn a mascot suit and head before. It is tough. It is hot. It is sweaty. It is heavy. That's hard work. Respect those people. They're probably earning minimum wage. It's an hourly salary. They're dancing around, taking pictures of a bunch of kids. They got little rugrats biting their ankles. You know, they're being yelled at all over the place. People want to take selfies. It's not an easy gig. Respect the mascot, man. Respect him. And Mr. Met, if I didn't love you so much, I'd tell you, how could you? You know, you have to stay in character, Mr. Met. You got to stay in character. What would Mrs. Met think if she saw you flipping the bird at fans? It's not the happy, healthy household of the Mets we like to portray. Be careful. You never know when little Met kids are watching. And God, it just is the perfect, perfect symbol of this season thus far for the Mets. Mr. Met flipping the bird and doing the cross the arm thing as well. I mean, that's a double whammy.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Tomorrow, Mr. Six, the flag football villain that punched Mraz right in the schnoz and has now been at a war of Facebook words with the league and Mraz, is going to be in studio tomorrow morning.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
And suddenly he took a private message between him and I, and he splattered it all across social media and mocked me for it. He then demanded to be on the show and said, "The truth will be heard, y'all.
Critics will be silenced."
And then negotiated a way to be in studio. I don't know what to expect. I am fascinated. I'm also a little bit scared. I don't know where this thing is going to go tomorrow. So I encourage you to find time at 11 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow, because I don't know if this is going to be like a Jerry Springer situation where he is leaping over the microphone to strangle Mraz and then might come after me. I might leave this thing like Geraldo with a broken nose. I don't know what is going to happen with Mr. Six. And I can tell you, his nickname is Mr. Six.
Wait, you changed your name?
Because I believe we should give him some proper level of respect. Because his name is just Six, and he doesn't have another name.
What kind of a stupid name is that, Fogel? What, are you trying to be an Irish R&B singer?
Oh, they let you pick any name you want when you get down there.
It's just Six. On his Facebook page, it's Six.
What? One name? One name? Who are you, Seal?
And he's got the letters 6, S-I-X, tattooed across his neck. So, people are asking me what he looks like. My best explanation would be a really mean Doug Glanville. Okay. Imagine Doug Glanville with a criminal element. That's kind of...
6.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
I don't know what to expect. I really don't. Again, Mr. Six has already thrown me for a loop. I reached out to him because he had blocked Mraz on social media.
I'm electronically ignorant.
And I sent him a message on Facebook and said, you know, we'd like to have you tell your side of the story. We understand that we want to be balanced here. I said Mraz has a tendency to be a bit of an agitator, hoping that Mr. Six would realize he wasn't walking into an unfair situation. I thought that I needed to kind of gloss Mr. Six a little bit and let him know I see through Mraz's nonsense, so that he felt like he was getting a fair shake coming on here, that maybe he thought he was just going to get sandbagged. What Mr. Six does is, instead of responding to a message in confidence,
privately, takes a screenshot of my message and splashes it all over his social media accounts, mocking me openly. And then declaring, "The truth shall be heard, y'all. The truth shall be heard," on message boards, on Facebook boards, on Instagram, on everything. So then we booked him over the phone. He wanted to do the interview after, I guess, he had enough of his minions tell him, "Yeah, you should do it, Mr. Six." And then he said, "Okay, I'm going to be in the area for work, so I'm going to drop on by." Look, I don't know if the chain gang is coming through Lower Manhattan tomorrow, so I don't know what kind of work he's going to be doing. Maybe work release. But Mr. Six is going to be in studio tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Be here to listen and to watch it at watchda.com. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Pete the Buddy Bellotti on the Wheels of Steel. Andrew Bogish on your headlines, and Ryan Hickey on your broadcast producer's role. I'm DA, the Mothership Disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.